Welcome to Seize the GM. I'm your host, Zendad.
I'm your co-host, Jules.
And I'm Null Operations.
Have you ever had a great idea for a campaign? Do you have a bunch of friends who want to play an RPG but have no one to run it?
Do you want to see what the world is like behind the GM screen instead of in front of it? Well, we're here to help you do just that.
Each week, the three of us will be discussing various GMing topics. Terminology, maps, atmosphere, world building, you name it. So sit back and relax, and let us help you improve your art of GMing, one show at a time.
Banter, banter, banter. And we are entering the banter segment.
Welcome back, everybody.
Hey.
All right. Candy is starting to go on sale already. Like, dropping prices cheap. I'm like,
wow.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. It's expensive, like, when it first comes out, and everyone thinks, oh, I'm going to do early and get their Halloween candy early, and then they eat all of it. You know, that's kind of standard of what happens generally.
That's what happens with me. But that's because I always get Reese's Cups, and I'm a Reese's Cup freak, so.
Oh, God. No, the pumpkin Reese's Cup. I like those better than the regular Reese's Cups.
I'm going to go with Zen here. Original Reese's Cups, or the rare times you can find the dark chocolate Reese's. Oh.
Yeah.
Ooh, yeah. I love the dark chocolate ones. Now, for me, though, I love the pumpkin ones. One, they freeze better.
Also, it's a weird combination of the proper ratio of chocolate to peanut butter sauce thing that is a Reese's.
That's true.
And I will have to say I like both because I do. But I've actually found that the best ratio is actually the Christmas tree ones.
That is true. That is true.
While I love them all year round.
Oh, yes. But there's here's the thing that I notice is the Halloween ones and the Christmas ones, they actually are bigger than the regular cups and usually cheaper, too. So it's like, okay, I get more Reese's deliciousness or bang for my buck.
Hey, they're almost back to the size they were when I started buying them as a kid.
I know. Hey, don't go off of me. It's like now they... Remember, like, regular-sized candy bars, and then you had the king-size ones, which are gigantic, and now you're looking at the king-size ones. Like, that's the regular candy bar size from when I was a kid.
No, that is not actually the case for me. That was still, like, I wasn't... Those didn't actually start coming out until a few years later.
But what have you two been up to this week? What's been going on?
I got my Wi-Fi fixed so that we don't have the problems that we had last week, which is why we didn't have a show this week. So, yeah, I got all of that fixed.
Remember, we said we were flying without a net, and, well, the internet caught up with us.
Yes, it did.
Now, you may now shake your fist at the skies.
Caught up with him. I mean, caught up with him.
Everybody else was fine. I was not.
I was trying to spread it around. You do that to be gracious. So shake your fist at the sky, curse the gods of the internet, but now we have appeased them and are moving forward.
Yes.
Yeah, but whoever said it was gracious, geez. You guys got the wrong idea.
But you know what? Actually, something crazy happened this last week. So I'm running my own homebrew game right now. And one of the guys in our group came to me and he said, hey, would you want to play something? And I said, yeah, yeah, I would love to play. Are you going to run something? He goes, well, I could. I'm like, you should do that thing because
I recommend this.
This is
a novel idea.
And
if you chap.
I like this idea. I heartily endorse it.
I have almost 40 episodes that could help you if you're a struggling new GM. No, I did You're not kidding. Say that, but it was very close. He's in my group. He knows that I do the show, but I told him he's run stuff before, but it's been a while. And since he's been with us, he hasn't run anything. So it's been like 2 years since he's run a game. And I was like, you know what, dude, that would be awesome. I would love to play because I haven't gotten to play. Since I've moved down here, I haven't really gotten to play other than like once. And that was kind of short-lived because I made it through a couple of levels in a Pathfinder game. And then it kind of just fizzled out because the people that we were playing with just started to fall to the wayside. So it happens. But yeah, so he was like, yeah, if you want to play, I'll totally run something. And I was like, we're doing this because I need to do something that's not run a game for a little bit.
For all of you listening along at home, go back and re-listen to our GM Burnout series. What is it? How to identify it? And how to ward it off in yourself? And you will see that Zendead is following his own advice.
And when he volunteered, well, because I've been trying to develop a group enough that I could step away. And I finally found enough people that I can do that with that are willing to be like, okay, cool. We're going to play this other one for a while. I get it. That's cool. And like my wife was actually really nervous. She goes, why don't we just finish what we were doing? I'm like, because I'm done. I'm getting tired.
You're tired.
And
yeah,
I'm like,
it takes a lot of energy to do this. You might love it, but still it's like, you know, you might love running or climbing, but eventually you do need to stop and sip some Gatorade.
And I did. And well, I'm getting ready to, and we start next week, I think. So, yeah, it'll be interesting new territory because I'm not running the game. I haven't even read the book that he's using. So
nice.
Yeah. All so right. It's like something that I've never seen before. It's going to be totally new, though. It's really funny because he was like, well, because we use Hero Labs in our games because it's really useful for making characters and everything else. I don't use it to run the game because I just have all my books and I make all the notes and I make the page note. And then I like use flags on all the pages that I need. And I'm done. I don't have to think about it. I just write a little number for what encounter number it is so that I kind of have a ballpark. And that's how I lay my books out so that I know which books I need. And my notes say, you know, encounter one is this, 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 and this. Okay, well, I just have to find encounter one. Boom, here's encounter one. Okay, first thing's a gargoyle. Okay, I know that's in the first one. Boom, I find it. You know, and if it's another one's in like the second one or the third one, I just flip to those pages and then I have my three books laid out with what I need to run the encounter because all the rest of it is ad-libbed. And that's just kind of how I do it. I've always kind of had to do it that way recently because I'm making everything up as I go now. And my hope is that if I keep some decent notes, I can eventually then write this out as an adventure because I would like to at some point. And so, yeah, I'm kind of fiddling with some of that stuff. So, yeah.
That'd be awesome. I got Deadlands on Sunday and I'm freaking the ever loving crap out.
I love that game.
Because I know the person that's the sheriff. And it's the one that we just had our first game last month and this is the second game. And it's also the one closest to Halloween. And our sheriff is Oh my god, she knows how to completely twist your brain around. She's made people scared of you know, a tumbleweed. She's people freaked out people with tumbleweeds. She's freaked out people with, like, a kind of busted up spittoon. You know, she knows how to tear. You cannot trust the environment in her games. Never trust the people. We already know this. But she knows how to turn just the world against you. It's just like, I can't trust this. We're all going to die. I'm excited, but oh my gosh. And it's right close to Halloween. And, you know, everyone, it's like, usually people try in costume. I'm not going to attempt it this time, I don't think. You know, usually we do, I mean, but we've been doing D&D for the past couple of years, so that was easy. Skull Crusher was easy to costume for. My current one, not so much. So, I just picked up a new Spyro, I just picked up a new Kigurumi. It's Spyro the Dragon, so I'm wearing that. Because if I get scared, I can pull the hood completely over and hide inside of this thing. You know, it doesn't mean we're all gonna die. Hide, hide, hide. So how about you? So how about you? You guys got any Halloween plans coming up?
I have a 6-year-old.
Anything cool?
she's getting excited for Halloween, and this is the first year that she's actually wearing an actual costume and not a here's a Hello Kitty outfit that just has a Hello Kitty on it. So this is the first year since she was like little. Like her first Halloween was hilarious because my wife, being the crafty person that she is, we had a black onesie and a black little beanie, and she made bat wings and sewed them to the onesie. So we had a little bat. And that was her first ever Halloween costume, so... Yeah.
Aww.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. And since then, it's been kind of the, you know, she just wants to do the Hello Kitty pink explosion outfits as soon as she sees them. And this year she was like, I want to go as a cat. And we're like with a tail and ears? She's like, yes. And we're like, done. That we can do. That is not a Hello Kitty thing that we just buy at the store. We buy the tail and we buy the ears and that's it. So.
Yep.
And yeah, we're going to do it all for her. And, you know. And like, because she wanted to go as like a.
That's going to be good.
There's a TV or a cartoon. And she wanted to go as one of the characters, but the characters, she's basically cross-gender cosplaying at 6. Because there's a TV show called, I think it's called Miraculous. It's a French cartoon. And... The two main characters like do some weird thing with these weird little. I don't know enough about it, but it's cute. And the guy is the cat, and so she's like, "I want to do that, but as me, like we can do this." So yeah.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
And yeah, it's weird. Having a kid who does that, so.
What, wants to dress up in costumes and stuff?
For me it is, because I don't dress up. It's just who
surly
I...
Surly man.
I haven't dressed up since I was a kid. I know. God, I am.
Mumble, grumble, get off your horrible. Lawn. Got it.
Okay. Okay.
I shouldn't tell you what Zippy's doing.
We had a Halloween party and we were supposed to go as out of work superheroes. Now, I burned up all of my karma. I burned it all up to pull off my costume. Because basically I wore a sweatsuit. I shaved my head, which I was already doing. But I shaved my facial hair off, all of it. I even shaved my chest. Now, and my forearms, everything. Like, I shaved it all off. And I went as Chemo Boy. Yeah. Oh. And I just laid there on the couch like most of the night. Everybody's like, come on, let's go do this. I'm like, I'm too tired.
Oh my gosh, that's so horrible,
actually had like a bunch of our friends, like one of them, their mom had cancer at the time. She came over and she's like, what are you supposed to be? And I told her, she just started laughing. And she totally was like cool with it.
Okay,
and,
well,
you know, it was just like, and I knew it that she was doing, you know, that she was going through chemo and everything. And I'm just like, yeah, it's, you know, we were supposed to do like out of work superheroes. So, yeah, I would never do it again. Well done, sir. Like I said, I burned up all of my good karma.
Oh, yeah.
No, not really.
There's no coming back for something like that.
Which makes this the perfect point to segue into...
How to mechanically enable horror games.
Our main topic this evening. We've talked for the last three episodes about what horror means, what to get out of it, what you've got to be aware of, but now the rubber hits the road or the dice hits the mat, and how do you do that, and what games, what mechanics in games allow you to do that? And the Doodly-Doo's got several options in there with links and as well as a couple of words about why they enable horror. But I guess we'll take some turns talking about some of the systems we've listed and then kind of deconstruct what it is about those mechanics so you can take them to other systems that you can share with us on the Facebook group.
So who wants to start first? Because we've got quite a few here.
Not it.
All right.
Not it.
So let me start with one that I... loved the system. I loved the world building that they did to it. And the name of the game is Cult. You cannot buy this game anywhere. I've looked for it. And I spent I think the link goes to where it existed on Noble Knights. If it ever comes in, you can like set up to, you know, let them know that you would like it. But the system is really weird because there are elements where the rules don't really play too heavily to any one thing. The whole game is based on the story and the environment itself being against you. And that is one of the few things mechanically that this game is, unlike a lot of others, where it has hard-baked mechanics going, this is horror, this is how to make this game horrible. It doesn't need anything because the setting that they do is so horrific to begin with. It doesn't need a rule set or something in the rules to make it horrifying for you. Because if it's done right, like the old World of Darkness stuff, those were so inherently story-driven that the horror just shows up. Whether you want it to or not, no matter what you do, it's just kind of how it works. So... It is by its very nature horror. And I'm not going to go into any more than that because if you want to, that is an entire discussion that we can talk about online because there's so much to that game. And there's only like 6 books that were published for it. This was a game that when it was first released in the US, The censors found out about it, and then they banned it because of the gore, the gore level that was inherent in the original. They actually had to tame it down to get it released in the U.S. It's originally, I believe, a British game.
That is so weird. Yeah, that's why I'm surprised, because usually, American stuff, dude, we came up with, you know, Friday the 13th, Freddy Krueger, Jason Voorhees, you know.
This is more like, okay, take Hellraiser. It up to about 12, and then make the actual city itself, that it's Metropolis, a reflection of hell, and then describe it all. That's cult.
That does sound like it is pretty much based
the whole
entirely around the idea of horror.
And it's all tied together very neatly. It's a very slim system because it's all about telling the stories. So.
Yep.
If you can find it, like I said,
look at that one.
If you can find it, it's amazing.
All right. Well, I've got one. We played this actually at Origins, but I've been familiar with it for a long time. It's actually a diceless mechanic system. It's called Dread. And you pretty much come up with a concept and a story as the GM. Okay, you know what the heck you're going to do. And what you do beforehand is like you get out a whole bunch. You come up with questions that would fit in for the characters that your players are going to build. So say you're going to be you're a bunch of like late high school students camping out after the homecoming dance kind of thing. All right. You describe your character, your motivations, who's your crush, blah, 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 stuff like that. And then what you do is you start, and after all that's done, you start narrating. And when things are done, when they want to do an action, all right, even if they're a trained lockpicker, but lockpicking under duress, or, you know, if they're a gymnast, you know, bending back, they're not going to have to do anything. But if they're trying to do something like a little strenuous or something dangerous, you use a Jenga, pretty much you use a Jenga game.
Yeah.
And it becomes a Tower of Terror. Because what happens is you build it up. So it's like, okay, this goblin jumps out and the football player guy grabs it and he chucks it. All right, it's squirming, but he's the football player, okay?
Yeah.
Draw one brick. And as you build it up, and the tower can start leaning left and right, and the tower falls over, the character that was working on it dies. It's just like, boom. And it's horrifying.
It's a sense of dread. It's a physical sense of dread because you can see the tower sitting right there.
Mm-hmm. And when we were playing it, people were like backing away from the table. Like they were still, the storyteller was just like still trying to bring us in. But we were just, as we kept pulling bricks, people were just scooching away, and just like moving away from the game. It was freaking everyone out, you know, and me. And of course, because it happens when I do this, because I'm terrible. What happens is, there's one thing where you can knock the tower down and give a reset intentionally. And it's the heroic sacrifice where your character dies and you're out of the game. But you get to describe what exactly you do, what happens, and all this other cool stuff. It's extremely narrative heavy. But the one thing is like that physical manifestation of this tower of horror and dread, and I don't know exactly what's going to happen and when it's going to happen and this and that, the other, and you're staring at it and it will start to lean and you can start breathing on it or something like that. It's like, you know, heaven helps you if a guy across the room sneezes while one person is walking up to the table, because if I freak out and jump and then hits down and then knocks the thing over, I've knocked it over.
Yep.
It's so damn freaky.
That is one of the really cool elements with that. Because, yeah, it has its own built-in mechanic of tension and release right in that. Because, I mean, mm-hmm. you can either, yeah. How many draws are you willing to draw?
But it's how many bricks. Exactly. So at the beginning, and that's the thing is like in almost every scary story in the beginning, everyone's happy. They're not worried. And then things start to, you start to lose your footing and things start to just psycho crazy, you know? Oh, I love it. It's the thing is though, that be careful when you're doing this one, depending on the intensity of the game, because the one that we played at Origins was called Your Heart's Desire. And it was, you know, a D&D group, and we're doing this thing. It's like finding what our heart's desire is and what are we willing to do to get it.
Nice.
And did that mean sacrificing other people at the table? And it was dark. It was scary. People were like, and the thing is, if you're going to be, you know, you don't have to tell people what the full campaign is going to be, but just a thing for people that have a slow start getting revved up and figuring out what they want to play. Let them know. It's just like, okay, it's going to be a bunch of D&D characters. Figure out what you want to do. You know, give them a couple of basic questions. So that way they're not coming in cold and it's like, oh crap, yeah. I didn't even think of, and then you have yeah. to,
no, you want to have,
you know what I mean?
You want to give them a little something thing that they can then work with.
Yeah, do this before, like, you know, you're all going to be playing Dread, you know, maybe the week before, just give them just a little bit. So that way they'll be able to start faster, because doing the questionnaire was actually the most difficult part for one of the people at our table who will remain nameless because he's nice. My husband. Yeah, so he took the longest to do his questionnaire because he was just so, it was close to the end of the con and he was kind of creatively burnt. Oh. All right. Come on, Gardemange. You've been sitting there silent right. and pretty.
Yeah, I know. It's what I do best. I'm going to recommend using the hero system to run horror. No, I know. Hold on. Stay with me. Yep. The hero system. Champions. That's a, or it's very variations, closely related, similar to GURPS.
Okay, you mean champions?
No,
like,
this is a game called Champions.
No.
No, I've played that, but yeah, there's based so many on the, superheroes.
The hero system is the underlying set of mechanics that you can use for anything from fantasy to sci-fi to horror. Champions is the most famous and well-known of what the hero system games are used for, because it was designed for superheroes originally. But here's the deal. It is the most flexible system there is. It is the easiest system to create limited resources and abilities for the PCs by giving them normal human characteristic maxima, by limiting the point values they're built on, that you don't have to limit the opposition. You don't have to create the monster, whatever it is, with those same set of rules. And in that asymmetry, in that ability to define an asymmetrical scenario, you start creating horror like we talked about. You can take away the agency of these normal humans with a very simple ability to create a fog and limit their sight. You can limit their ability to act in ways that other systems don't contemplate, because you control that level of asymmetry. Balancing those limited resources against what you can do with a system of ultimate flexibility can give you the freedom to create a significantly powerful horror game that is enhanced by the mechanics.
Never thought about that. Because, I mean, I've played Champions as a superhero game.
Yeah, but imagine if you had normal characteristic max and were built on 150 points. a single damage reduction 25% power on a zombie suddenly becomes huge. When you're, let's say, when you roll 4d6 for your damage, you're averaging 14 points, and if you get past their armor, I mean, you're gonna, it's whittling it away, and you feel like you're doing nothing if they're not regenerating because you're decided to be a jerk. You can make a zombie, or you know what else you can do with those stats? The zombie horde. The stats are actually a pack of 6 zombies, so when you tell them 50 zombies are bearing down on them, it doesn't really matter to them that it's, you know, really only 9 stats, because each horde of zombies is a separate set of stats, but you can then model them differently. You can create entangles, because it's really a pack of 6 zombies, so an entangle means a different zombie grabs your arm, a different zombie grabs your leg, another zombie grabs your other arm. You're trapped. You're struggling against them while they hold you down, and another pack is coming up on you.
Nice. Yeah. You monster. I love it.
That's how you make horror with the infinite flexibility of hero system, or GURPS to another degree. I believe GURPS may thank the hero system in its preface.
They're both pretty linked at about the same time frames.
Or it could be vice versa. Yeah. For anyone who hasn't played it, the hero system takes away all the pretense of game design and shows you the point values for how to balance something in a game of your choosing. The point value of your characters and what you allow them to have is what matters more. You define the special effect after you define the underlying power. We'll talk about this at a later game, because for now, Zen's going to give us another one of a game that mechanically enables horror.
I have not gotten a chance to play it. I have only heard about it, and it is called Knights Black Agents. And it is based on, if Call of Cthulhu were to happen present day and the government is the ones fighting them. Yeah, that's what Knights Black Agents, new one is. It's the old Delta Green game. And they have a way of dealing with, because it's Cthulhu, so you always have the insanity issues that go along with it, because cosmic horror plays to that. One of the things that they have is a way for them to kind of preserve their sanity is they have connections to other people. Now, you can take the damage to yourself and your mind just slowly starts, well, not slowly, sometimes it's very quickly, and as you quickly go insane, but you can actually shunt this off to your connections, and you can start forcing those connections to weaken as you're pushing people away and trying to compartmentalize these cosmic horrors that you're interacting with and that you can't tell anyone about. As you slowly separate yourself, and then you start to go actually crazy because all you have left is your sanity. And it's been eroded because those connections have been lost. You have lost what it means to be human anymore, even. It is really cool. Like, that was the way it was described. And I'm like, I want this game. I want to use these elements in all of these other games, because holy crap, that's amazing.
Because at the end, you have to decide, kind of, like, okay, am I going to keep this to myself,
and
or
you're
am I going to shunt it?
The truth.
It's still that inevitable insanity. Yeah. But it's also the inevitable descent into insanity and the futile effort of trying to keep your sanity. And you see that throughout a lot of, like, heck, even in Call of Cthulhu, when the boat rams Cthulhu.
Yeah.
It's meant to show that,
Yeah, that's the whole beauty of it. Is
it doesn't do anything.
Because it is based on Cthulhu. So, you know, and Call of Cthulhu has insanity rules, which that's why I kind of chose Knight's Black Agent, because it has a unique way of dealing with that. And I think the new stuff just came out. Like the new edition for it just came out. And I believe it's Pelgrane Press that does it. But I will double check and I'll make sure that it's in the doobly doos. Okay. Yeah. It's
clicking on the doobly doo, you are correct.
Like, I want to get a hold of it at some point and run a game.
Heck, oof.
Yeah.
That's oh my gosh. Because you're going to make everybody hate themselves, because I know how you either run them, because I know you, and you will make them, you will actually slowly start changing.
Well, those connections, those people that are at the other end of that connection are finding out the things that you're trying to keep. That's that corrosion of that connection, is you're kind of divulging information to people that should never find out about it. And so they're going insane with you because you've taken away agency from them.
They don't have a choice in the matter.
Yeah. If that is how this actually works.
But delicious monster.
That's the way it was described to me, so I have to go with that until I actually get a hold of it and get a chance to read it. But yes, and I will totally push every one of those buttons because that's what I do.
Yep. Uh-huh. Oh, you sick. Ah, I love it. Oh my gosh. So yeah. That's still the sanity meter, but now you're bringing other people in.
You know, it has its own little interesting elements that you can really use. So, and that's why Call of Cthulhu falls in with Night's Black Agent, because they both use a version of sanity as a horror element to represent that understanding of the horrors that are around you, or the things that you're forced to do, even. Because you can lose sanity just by seeing a dead body in the game. Because you kind of do. You see enough dead bodies, and eventually you kind of become numb to it, but never completely. So.
I'm going to keep shut.
Yep.
All right. I guess I'm up next then. Deadlands is one incredibly, incredibly PC risk death whole nine yards thing. Here's the thing that makes I'm not talking about the new Hell on Earth. No, the original Deadlands and the Deadlands 20th anniversary. One, best way to put it is you get what's called fate chips, right? They're poker chips. And in the beginning, you reach in and draw three chips, if I recall correctly. And each chip can be used to do, like, there's the red chips, the white chips, and the blue chips. And each of them has blue chips are the best, white chips are the worst. But the thing is, because it's Deadlands and it's the Weird West and there's monsters and everything, the way that these work, you can use them to, I give up one of my fate chips. I can negate a damage, I can add dice, I can bump the die type. So the way Deadlands works is, depending on what you drew, and you actually draw cards to get your stats, which is kind of cool, it depends on what happens. You know, so if you get like low spades, it's like 1d4, like two of spades or something, it's crap. But you know, that you can bump the die type up, or, you know, this and that and the other. The thing is, though, one, you can negate a damage. So if you take X number of wounds to your arm or your leg, it's crippled. And this is Deadlands. You don't come back from that, okay? Once it's crippled, it's crippled. Second, if you take 3 damage to your head or your heart, you are dead. The only time you can come back is as a Harrowed, which is undead, which is even worse. So, but the thing is that depending on the type of chips you spend, so you take 5 damage. You can spend a blue chip and I think negate 3 of them. And then you spend a red chip and negate the other 2. Thing is, depending on what chip you're spending and what you're spending it for, you can give the GM their own fate chips to spend against you. So it's gambling. And the thing is, it is a game literally of life and death when you're doing this kind of thing. So you're wondering is like, do I give the fate chip up and negate this one wound, but I'm not going to have it later in case this thing has another form or it has a buddy in the back? You know, so that's one of the scariest things. And also that, you know, the other thing that's really scary is depending on the die type, D4, D6, and it goes all the way up to D12, the high number explodes for GM and player. So the GM's only rolling D4s.
Yeah.
That's a 1 in 4 shot of them rolling a 4 and adding and adding and adding. They have a higher chance of that. But so I'm rolling a D12. Yeah, I have a better chance of getting like a 12, but it's harder. So do I really want to bump up the die type? So this, I don't know exactly what to do. And do I risk it? Do I not? It's
agonizing.
It's terrifying. Absolutely terrifying. And the thing is, I think you can actually spend it for other people too, if I recall correctly. And the thing is, like, do I spend it on somebody else or save it? You know? And it's absolutely terrifying because you're like, that's our huckster, that's a spell slinger. All right, he just pulled off this awesome thing. He just got hit in the head. I can negate that 1 damage, but I know what spell he's going to pick next round. And if he blows that, he gets taken over by a Manitow and then they start fighting us. Mm-hmm. But if he wins, but he gets an awesome power again. Oh, yeah. God. And you're weighing everything and trying to do calculations in real time.
Well, that's cool.
It's like they built suspense into combat. I loved it. I love it. And it's just, you know, an initiative is done by cards. And that's the other thing is however well you roll in your initiative equals a certain number of cards.
Yeah.
You can dodge if you have one up your sleeve. But do you want to put one up your sleeve or get a jump on somebody? So it has that old fashioned, don't look That's behind cool. the door. Ah, it's great. Yeah, sorry, prattled a little bit there. I apologize. All right, Gardemanger, you're the next.
I'm going to go with another overlooked game that really can be used for horror purposes from the early 90s, and that's the original Rifts book. Rifts, yes, which is overlooked by a lot of people. It came out in a flood of magic plus tech plus future tech in the late 80s and early 90s, and it kind of has spun out of that horror ideal that originally kind of grasped closely because it was related to Beyond the Supernatural, which was Palladium's earlier game that it most directly followed and actually has a complete story continuity too, because a character meta plot from the Beyond the Supernatural crosses over into Rifts in later games. It is built around horror because the idea of the rifts themselves create opening for extra-dimensional creatures to stalk humanity in a post-apocalyptic setting. Your resources are supposed to be limited in a setting like that. Even the cover of the Slugorth Slaver is showing the exact nature of humanity's challenge in the face of these unexplained and unknown creatures. Mega damage is nice, if you know it, but in the original book, it was much more sparingly given out, and there were a lot of character classes that may not even have mega damage armor. You can use Rifts to do an exploration of the unknown style horror. You can use Rifts to challenge the conceptions and trap characters in enclosed environments. It tried to hold on to its horror for a long time. Yeah. Its first major setting book were the Vampire Kingdoms, where humanity was chattel to the vampires. The Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse were a significant metaplot event that occurred. It has elements of horror that aren't being used often enough, I think, and I think it should be used for what was possibly the best horror game that came out of that combination of science and magic.
Yeah. The thing is that because it was science meets magic, a lot of people didn't. Usually when you think something like that, you're not thinking horror. And especially with some of the classes, I mean.
Well, yeah, but there were the,
like,
good
the crazies,
ones,
you know. But you get the glitter boys. But you get, like, the glitter boys, they don't feel kind of horror-esque. But, you know, it depends on what the players are actually focusing on when they're playing. And they're all like, you know, but then the thing is, like, you have the crazies and you're like, I love those guys. Those are some of my favorites, or the juicers. But the thing is, like, I don't think it was pitched as well as a horror game. And I think that was a problem. I don't think, yeah. I think a lot of people kind of saw this as a sci-fi fantasy epic versus abject horror. And that's what and they're all mad because, oh, it's so out of balance. And my husband said, it's like, you know, I hated the game. He hated Rifts until he realized it was a horror game, and boom.
Yeah, because that's a whole different
monster
right there.
We can discuss the mechanics of Palladium and the evolution of Palladium's mechanics on a different show.
Mm-hmm.
There are more of these games than the Doodly-Doo. Including,
I speak about
Jules
it a lot, so I decided
Fears
not to describe that one here.
Lips.
You can hear me talking about it on almost any other episode. So, didn't want to bore you guys. I thought I'd give you something new.
Well, the links are included, and so with that, and with us wrapping up the way certain games kind of use their mechanics to enable horror, we're going to move along right into.
And now we enter Stat Blocks. This is a segment where you can use something that we've created in your game tonight.
Garmanger, you go first. I had to jump in on that. I have been waiting for this one. Are you kidding me? He hinted about it last time, and then due to tech issues, I didn't get to hear it. Now I'm like,
Hey, this is one I came up with right before we were supposed to record last week. This is literally me going, I need to do a stat block. But, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, gather round while I tell you about the Continental Express Pocket Watch. It's alluringly simple, a reminder of times gone past. The railroad watch on the dresser can barely be heard in the stillness of the night. The open-faced design with its stark black numerals on a white field mark it as a remnant of that truly magnificent railroad era. Slightly burnished with a patina that comes only from age, the pocket watch has a place in your heart. This beautiful piece of history evokes a warm and nostalgic glow from everyone who sees it. The Continental Express, though, is a mystery. The engraving on the back of the watch shows it's from 1895 and that the railway, the Continental Express, commissioned it. Try as you might, you can't seem to find a history of this railroad or even what route it took. How it came to find it in your possession, well, you don't quite recall. In between the ticking of the seconds, the pocket watch waits for you to wind it yet again. While keeping time is what it does best, the crack on its face betrays a history you haven't figured out quite yet. You can't shake the feeling that this pocket watch is something more than just a watch. All you can do, though, is wait. The waiting drags on you, drains you, pulls your mind back to the watch. What is it that the old conductor did with this watch? What secrets does it hold? Well, the watch is just that, a watch. What it does, though, on the second inset face, is track when the doors open. Doors to somewhere else. Doors something can come through. doors you haven't seen opening.
Oh, man.
What will the next winding of the watch bring?
That is brilliant.
Will you even notice it before it's too late?
That's so fun.
Oh.
That's so cool. Okay, I'm going to go next.
I love your stuff. That's so cool.
Now, I...
Thank you.
When I first was starting to work on these, I was like, I need something. And my wife is actually the inspiration behind this because she gave me the name. And she's like, well, what does it do? And I was like, I will figure it out. And it is the Bumbles. Have you heard of the Bumbles? No? Well, sit back and try not to think about how even now they could be invading as I fill you in on them. The Bumbles, as they're called, hail from a distant star system. They're small. Small enough to get into your body through any hole that is natural. And unnatural. Well, this is not unusual, the things that happen once they get in. Now that is unusual. Once in, they wait until you enter a sleep cycle. Then they get to work. The next day seems off. You're a little clumsy. You have a Butterfingers day. Then, the next, you trip or fall a few times. Then things just continue to worse. The drop things followed by slowly decreasing your overall movement. The whole time the Bumbles have been weaving tendrils of some organic material similar to carbon fiber tubes, anchoring it to points on the skeleton and shortening the lengths. As your movements decrease, they start to reproduce at an accelerated rate, continuing to grow fibers that slow your movement faster. Once you stop, then the colony goes into overdrive, till they erupt from you and float along to the next hapless victim of the Bumbles. So, yeah. I wanted something that was
kind of
like a disease, but not a disease, and just kind of weird.
Well, then you have...
What do you got for us?
I like it. Okay. It's like Earth's hidden powerhouse. Sometimes I think the surest sign that intelligent life exists elsewhere in the universe is that none of it has tried to ever tried to contact us. Calvin from Calvin and Hobbes. The Drake equation tells us that there should be many other civilizations out there in the universe. The Fermi paradox brings up the lack of evidence of extraterrestrial life. Why haven't aliens visited Earth? The theories are infinite, but the truth is much simpler. Aliens are terrified of Earth's defenders, so they give it a wide berth. But it's not the humans that terrify extraterrestrials. Why would aliens be worried about an impulsive and violent hairless apes with delusions of grandeur? There's a race on Earth that is rumored to exist on a higher plane of intelligence. Rumors of their strange thought processes, intelligence, and technology terrify any extraterrestrial who has heard the tales. And as such, the technology has never really been analyzed or reverse engineered. While they are not immortal, they are incredibly durable. They can survive temperatures over 300 degrees Fahrenheit, extreme dehydration, the vacuum of space, which is negative 270 degrees centigrade, only 1 degree above absolute zero, give or take, and even deadly ionizing radiation. It is said that after humans trigger the nuclear holocaust, these creatures will still be around and taking bets on the cockroaches. But why are the humans completely unaware of the potential of these creatures? Oh, scientific protocol, of course. Interfering with an ongoing experiment would skew the results. And the tardigrades have spent thousands of years observing us.
Oh, that is great. No, but it kind of is, not as, if you think about it.
Not as spooky as the rest of you guys, but...
Yes.
It's a very Twilight Zone
piece.
It is exactly the sort of twist and setup and reveal you'd get from the Twilight
Zone. I like Butter Bears. I think tardigrades are really awesome.
Nice. And
yeah, so that's... Well, that's what
let's
we
go
do.
Ahead and swing on into the next thing.
So, yeah.
Lexicon, where we give you cool words to help improve your vocabulary.
Well, I've got a really simple one, and it's fairly short. And the word is jabber. Serious.
I think Mr. T is going to show up. I'm going to hide.
Actually...
You mean
what we do most of these games, these episodes? Rapidly and quickly babbling consequentially.
Correct.
And sometimes
it's a verb.
What's the official definition? Rapidly speaking in an unintelligible or ununderstandable manner.
The 15th century. And it comes from Middle English, which is jabberin'. Which is pretty much jabber. So, yeah, it really hasn't changed.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's just, it's another use
jabber.
Of a...
It's... The thing is, like, certain words have a connotation and almost an onomatopoeia, if that's the word I'm thinking. Because, like, jabber, it sounds almost maddening, sticky, chat kind of a thing. Like you would think of birds or something like that. It has that feel. The word itself has that feel.
Like I said, simple, like, easy.
Yeah.
I knew this was going to be a thick, heavy episode, so I wanted to make it kind of short and concise and a simple word. But one that's... Yeah, exactly. But it's also in the bottom 40% of words used, so it is still on the low end.
Quit your jibba-jabba and move on.
I'm telling you what, because... All right, guys.
Clearly, they did not watch enough A-Team in the 80s.
Whatever network did that.
Do-do-do. Do-do-do-do-do.
Oh,
yeah, right.
The thing is, if you could actually tell, what kind of horrible.
We're going to go ahead and give our closing remarks here and shout outs. And Jules, go. I know. It's awesome.
I hate you so much. Okay. For mine, I'm actually going to be, pardon me.
Okay.
It's a...
Nice.
That's what I describe it. It's a card game. It's called Gloom. Okay? Gloom, it's... I don't know if anyone's familiar with the... It's kind of like Addams Family meets Ghastly Crumb Tines. And... Or Tins. I always screw up the... But it's like... There's a whole bunch of families, and you pick a family that you want to play. And your goal is to do things that hurt yourself and eventually die. You know, so you're doing is just like spending the night in a graveyard, you know. But
yeah,
you can get positive points by being taken to the zoo or, you know, stuff like that. So what... Yeah, you want to, it's, you know, it's kind of like golf, but the thing, a difference, you know, is you can mess with the other players. So, and the thing is, what you do is, it's not just playing the cards. You are building a narrative. It's just like, they spent the night in the graveyard, but the next day their parents picked them up and they took the kids to the zoo and they all had a wonderful dinner. And You know, and you can play cards on yourself or other people, and it's awesome. And it's just, it's dark, but the artwork is good. And the cool thing is the cards are so cool. They're kind of like this kind of vinyl plastic thing. And
yeah, it's all overlays.
You play them over your cards for your family. So, and they have, thank you. I couldn't think of the word right there. It is so cool. And I had it's a lot of fun, and it's so dark, but it's like silly dark, and you're giggling, and you know, once you wax the whole family, the one who has that's when the game ends, and the one who has the lowest score at that time wins. So you might kill your entire family off, but if somebody's really horrible,
game is actually designed by the guy who designed the Eberron campaign setting for 3/5. Yeah, Keith Baker. Yeah, so. I just happened to know that. Because when Gloom came out, the company that I was working with, like, we were doing stuff with Atlas Games, who's the company that makes it. So, yeah, we got copies of it to play in the office and everything else. It was fun. Yeah. All right, Joel, go to Moshe, what you got?
Well, by the time this comes out, we will have finished the first set of the card catalog posts on Seize the GM's website, which were a Shadow Running crew, and we're moving on to the next ones, which you should find, which is a fun and exciting exploration of Mystara and basic D&D. And that leads me to my closing remarks and recommendation for you. The weather's finally turning to fall. This weekend, get outside. Get out of the city if you have to and look up at the sky and look up at the moon and spend some time away from the noise and away from the hustle and bustle of postmodern life and look at the moon.
I agree.
Yeah.
I actually agree on that. It also forces you to stop.
Well, you will be right there then.
Because this
turns in, take us home.
Actually calling back to a very early horror movie. And that is not that far back. Far back. Because that was like the second or third movie made. So no. The original Phantom? Friday the 13th.
Them?
Yes.
Night of the Lepus.
But it's old school film modern horror, though. Yeah. No, 70
modern horror.
I think was when that one came out.
It's 80s. But
yeah. I actually got to watch it recently, and it's still good. Like, it plays on so many of the what are used in horror games now. Those tropes came from other places. They came a lot from the movies and from stories. So it's kind of a way to kind of see them. If you're a visual learner, you can watch them actually happen on the screen in front of you. So that's actually why, because it's just pretty cool. So yes. Yes. Trixie me. Yeah.
Dang. Never thought about it that way. Well, no, not true. It's more of the, you know, we're up the Hollywood seeing like the seeing the tropes rather than reading about it. I never thought about you know, trying to get the feel of the trope.
Well,
interesting.
I guess that wraps us up, folks. So
that's kind of cool, dude.
Until next time, when we will be discussing some new topic. we're going to be stepping away from horror for a little while. because...
Well, it's. I think we're going to be kind of...
Well, we have some other topics we need to touch, so... We're gonna touch
much
on
to my,
those.
Much to my sadness.
But we will come back. October will be our favorite time of the year to do horror stuff. And I've actually thought about doing some...
I know.
Mid-year. Like, maybe do a show or two that have a lot of horror themes. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, hey, tell us how you'd want to do it, you know? I was thinking maybe either that or also on holidays or events or time things where...
Yes, we did.
Have that feeling of dread, like, oh, well, October. We actually had October Friday the 13th. Oh, yes. For all you other plebes, it's an unlucky day. For us Italians,
so.
It's a lucky all right, folks. Day.
Mm-hmm. All right, so oh, until like next sure. week.
I got the last couple bags of candy.
Play more games.
Take care of yourselves. Be safe trick-or-treating. And play more games.
Yep. And come back and listen to us next week here at Seize the GM.
You can contact us or the show by using Twitter, Facebook, or regular old email. Our Twitter accounts are at Zendead,
at Jules Podcaster,
and at No Operations.
And the show's Twitter account is at Seize the GM.
And you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/SeizeTheGM.
You can email questions or comments to the show at admin@SeizeTheGM.com.
You can email me at zendead@seizethegm.com.
Me at jules@seizethegm.com.
And me at nulloperations@seizethegm.com.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of Seize the GM. Feel free to leave a comment about this episode on our webpage, www.seizethegm.com. Let the dice fall where they may, and we'll see you again next week.
Seize the GM is released under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, Share-alike 4.0 International License. All copyrighted materials referenced herein are held by the respective owners. No infringement is intended, and no claim of ownership is implied.
The music for the show is Dreaming Spirit, off of the album Ghost Machine, by The Enigma TNG. His music is released under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives, 3.0, Unported License.